The podcast you're about to listen to was recorded prior to the current Russian invasion of Ukraine, as well as all the episodes covering the Russian invasion and occupation of Afghanistan. Speaking for all members of the War and Film family, I'd like to express my deepest condolences to the people of Ukraine. On this podcast, we strive to view all war films through the critical lens of historical significance. And perhaps one day, war will be relegated only to history books and films. And humans will look back with amazement that we were ever capable of such horrors. But until that day, all I can say is from the bottom of our hearts, we wholeheartedly condemn all unprovoked acts of violence against civilians and implore rational and diplomatic solutions be found to all current and future conflicts. Thank you. Welcome to the War on Film podcast, part of NotARobotPodcast.com. This is the podcast where we personally curate a series of films that depict humanity's violent conflicts. We curate them into lists of miniseries that focus on different time periods, battles, or wars, and each week we discuss the historical and cultural significance of a film in the miniseries. The miniseries you're currently listening to features the films that depict the Soviet Union's invasion and occupation of Afghanistan, starting with 1988's The Beast of War. Afghanistan is a mountainous, landlocked country at the crossroads of Central and Southern Asia that, despite numerous invasions over the centuries, continues to exist. It's easy to forget in the light of America's latest 20-year-long occupation that Afghanistan is considered the graveyard of empires. Alexander the Great, Genghis Khan, various Persian kingdoms, the Sheikh Empire, the British Empire, the Soviet Union, and now America have marched into Afghanistan only to walk out again. The oft-quoted maxim that those who don't study history are doomed to repeat it is clearly only half right. Are we angels or devils? Let's find out together on this episode of The War on Film. And I'm joined today in the belly of the beast by an oil-soaked fellow podcasters, film fans, and reviewers. Comrade Holly, would you mind telling us something about today's film?
The film The Beast, or also The Beast of War. It depends on where you're searching for it.
Yeah, I noticed that. It goes by different names. It's a hard thing to Google this name, just The Beast, because you get a bunch of different...
I was watching The Sandlot for like 20 minutes before I realized I was in the wrong movie.
Oh, yeah. That is the dog's name, The Beast.
But this was based on, although fictional, nobody really knows what happens. It was based on true events about a tank that was lost in the desert. And this is what...
The desert of Afghanistan, yes. Which does not exist. Yes. There's a lot of production quality to this movie that really set me in a weird mode when I was watching it. And as soon as I saw us, we got the worst of the Baldwins in this one. Stephen Baldwin, his name came up as the only like really big name in the cast. I was like, oh God, what do we have here? But this movie really grew on me. Like I was like really enjoying especially the last half hour of it.
Mm. Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's purely fictional. I was reading the reviews that came out when the movie came out, and basically they were like, there's no raised mentality about politics or war or anything. It's just a story, but it does a really good job at which. I thought that was kind of a weird comment too, because I felt like it did. There was still its own commentary, but
I believe it's a crew of five.
I think so. Yeah. Started with five, and you know they dwindled down. Obviously, you know this is war. Today's episode is brought to you by sun-dried raisins and the desperate taste of revenge. However, you know, the war itself was initially sponsored by about 3 billion U.S. tax dollars, but we don't have to get into that just yet. But this was great. I mean, immediately, you know, the first 3 to 7 minutes that it's on, I mean, you're dropped into action just, and it goes.
A war crime is just, it's that's a hell of a way to open a movie with these are your protagonists destroying a village and just randomly shooting and killing children and running men over with the tanks. That's where I was like, what is this movie's agenda? And it really you go on a ride. Spoil for the end. I think this is a recommend. I mean, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen the movie, you might want to go watch the movie before joining this. Charlie, what did you think of this?
Yeah. And before I move on to that, like, yeah, definitely watch it because there's some twists. So, like, if you don't want the twists spoiled for you, yeah, pause and come back. But yeah, so this movie, yeah, it starts really weird. Like, it's a bunch of war crimes, like over the top gruesome war crimes, and it's like a bunch of like American good old boy actors, and they're like, hey, Kaminsky, like, come over here, like, so like I didn't really realize like who this is depicting at first, and then it took me like a very long time to realize, like, oh, these are Russians. It says in the tagline Soviet, like, tank, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. I'm also sick, so, you know, cut me some slack. But, yeah, so it starts off, and they even give you, like, a first-person view, like, of the tank, like, as if you were the tank blowing up these villages. It's very, I mean, this village. It's very, I don't know. There's some funny choices like that in the movie. But, yeah, this is a propaganda movie for sure. This is, like, one of the beefiest propaganda movies I feel like we've watched recently, because it's like, wow, the Russians are so bad, even the Russians want to kill the Russians.
Right.
And this is like spiritually dedicated to the brave Mujahideen fighters, just like Rambo 3. It's
oh yeah, we're coming
same year,
coming to a podcast near you soon.
Yeah. So it's so
weird to look back at the Mujahideen and see them as the unsung heroes in light of things that would come after the 80s.
Yeah.
But there was a real odd American champion of, well, not odd, because they were fighting the Russians for us.
Yeah, exactly. This is like right before the end, before we start, like, I mean, I guess this is right after we like ramped up support and we're like giving them Stinger missiles and stuff. So I guess it's part of why, like, one of the main plot points is like an RPG. It's like, yeah, it's interesting because like nobody really dies in this movie unless like a Soviet did it. They're like even Soviets that die, it's the Soviets' fault. Like, it's very interesting.
Yeah,
I didn't even realize that. Oh, dang.
Yeah, so
I'm playing through the events of the movie. Yeah, you're right.
Like, there was some mercy killings, but like they had already been, like, you know, yes, quote unquote, yeah, killed by the Soviets. So it's like every single drop of this movie is like, wow, the Soviets are pretty bad, huh? They even say to each other, like, wow, we're the Nazis. Like, it's so funny.
Oh, yeah, that's. The movie was great until that moment. I was like, all right, I get it.
It does still admit that the Soviets beat the Nazis. Like, it does put that in there,
yeah,
which is, like, odd. I'm like, if you're already going this far, like, why not just say, like, and the Americans were there at the end? Like, it's so wild. Because, like, this movie, I think, is, like, the perfect example of, like, being aware of, like, how messed up the situation is, but still having an agenda. It's like near the end, the guy basically says ACAB. He's like, you can't be a good soldier in a rotten war. And like, they always say, like, you have a choice and all this stuff. But like, it's still like, you know, we didn't learn anything. It's wild. Nah. Because I'm like, oh,
sorry, I just keep thinking of like, it's also like, this is like a, imagine like, I was trying to think of like Vietnam movies to add to the list. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, is there any Vietnam movie made from the Vietnamese perspective? And I couldn't find anything, but like, this is almost like a Vietnam allegory told from the perspective of the Vietnamese, the occupied country.
Yeah.
And we just don't, it doesn't exist in the American market, I think.
Well, you can tell, because I think this movie made like no money. I think I saw it had like an $8 million budget and made like $180,000 in the box office.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was, and you could see the production value is not great. They have, the movie basically exists just because somebody owned a tank.
Oh my
God. Because it's all exterior. It's all outside. You're never inside a building. You're only inside the tank.
Yeah.
They even do a trick in the beginning, which they don't do very well, where for some reason the whole crew of the tank gets out while they're committing their war crime or hunting rebels. They say by not really hunting, just randomly shooting into the town.
Yeah.
They all get out of the tank and walk around, and they supposedly come across another tank, which is kind of confusing, that gets blown up and gets caught on fire, and they try and save that crew, but they die. And it's kind of confusing because you're like, wait, is that the tank they just got out of?
Oh, yeah. Or is... Oh, my God.
It's very confusing at that moment because they clearly didn't have two tanks to show you that there's two different tanks in the town.
Oh, my God, that's so funny. I didn't even notice that.
I didn't even notice that. I thought it was two tanks coming in at the same time or something. So
let's do focus on what was in that basket. It got something good. They were like, oh, check this out. And it caught on fire. I wanted to know what was in the basket.
Yeah, they got out for the looting phase of the war crime. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, we've murdered enough people. Let's see what these guys had.
Yeah, they're just like shooting goats and stuff too. They didn't even care.
Yeah.
Dang Russians.
Exactly. Oh. Only good Russian is a no. That's what this movie do. There's a part right after that where there's like a little baby. Oh my God. The people who made this movie really had like they had blood on their teeth. They were bloodthirsty. They take a little baby, they put his little cheeks in the dirt, like with fire all around on this set. And they use like actual explosions. You can see like huge explosions blowing dust off the set and stuff.
There is no CGI. Everything is in camera real.
They take this baby, they put its little cheeks in the dust, and then they have the camera like way back behind, and they find this baby crying. Taj.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. What are their names?
Yeah, I think his name's Taj, right?
Well, Taj is the one that became the Khan. He was the nephew. Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, okay. He was the Khan at that point. He just didn't know it yet.
Okay.
He picks up the baby. I'm already oh my God, this poor baby. There's like literally like flames and stuff right next to it. They pick up the baby, and the baby has like trauma makeup on, like fake blood and like gunpowder, like smoke and stuff all over it. I was shocked. I was like, this poor baby. The baby's crying. And, like, obviously he's crying. This is awful. They really wanted to pour it on the, like, these guys are the worst guys. You think you know a bad guy? Double it. That's how bad these guys are. It's so funny.
Is that the guy? Is that the Taj is brother is the one that gets run over by the tank.
Oh, that was gruesome.
So gruesome.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And then he doesn't know he's dead yet, and he's having that standoff with Mustafa is his
uncle.
He's like uncle or something. Mm-hmm. And then who's the guy who rolls up?
I'll start with an M.
I don't know. He's got the shades on though.
Badass. Yeah.
He's got the aviator glasses. That guy has a great look.
Oh my God, it's so good.
He rolls up on a motorcycle with his crew. He needs to speak to the Khan, which I guess I imagine Khan is the name of the elder the masculine elder leader of the town. And I know in Iraq, they're more called imams, but it seems like the same kind of thing. Just the elder official of the town. And they have a little standoff. Something about running to Pakistan. Like, they're all like, aren't you going to run off to Pakistan?
Yeah, you don't like it? Go to Pakistan. That's fine.
Dude finds out he's now the Khan because his father died in the attack, and he finds out his older brother died in the attack. He vows revenge. Bedell.
Bedell, yes.
That's what they call it, I believe. Yeah. The blood vengeance.
Actually, Mustafa may have been the guy with the shades.
Oh, really? I thought Mustafa was like his uncle guy. Akbar is.
Yeah, I feel like Akbar might have been his uncle.
Yeah, I'm looking at the cast now. I think you're right. Mustafa is the guy with the shades.
Okay, great.
And Akbar, I think, is the uncle. I want to try and get the names kind of right. And then they have... there's also... I realized halfway through that, like you were saying, that nobody dies unless the Russians do it.
Yeah.
But also, like, the whole crew is pretty incompetent on the Mujahideen side. Like, they don't know how the RPG works. They're kind of just randomly shooting at the tank every now and then. But there is a pack of ladies that runs around this movie.
Oh,
yeah. That are the most competent in the whole film. They, like, nothing... Everything that actually gets done, everything that actually traps the tank is all done by these women.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. With rocks. The whole time they're talking about, like, Goliath is stopped by rock, Goliath is stopped by rock. They forgot to actually use rocks. That's the problem.
A little foreshadowing there.
They find an RPG launcher that was left behind by the other tank crew, and that's what they're going to use to kill what they call the beast, which is the tank. which they never really... count how many rocket-propelled grenades they actually have, because that would be the more important treasure to hang on to, rather than the launcher.
Yeah, we know it's at least two.
And then the tank crew, we got a real assortment of personalities here. And you're right. It is. I think John Wayne Award all around for just doing American accents, and then every now and then saying Kaminsky.
It's so good.
I think I heard like a Russian accent twice. Like maybe it was like just sort of slipped in there, but oh boy.
Yeah, I think as soon as Stephen Baldwin showed up on set, and they're like, okay, I guess we're all just gonna match what he's doing because. The one guy, the guy who plays Daskal, I feel like he could do an accent if he wanted to, but he was just talking a lot.
He was the
commander, the officer of the tank.
Yeah, he ended up being the worst commander? Offender because he was the one like Kovachenko, get over here. Like he was like, but yeah, he was like the head honcho. My God. You think that Kaminsky is going to be like the big war crime guy because he doesn't give a crap. He's drinking brake fluid fermented in the sun with like raisins or something. And then Daskal comes around and he's like, I was blowing up Nazi tanks when I was 10. I'm going to make it. I run this.
I was trying to track this guy's backstory. There's a do some math. I'm like, all right. So Stalingrad, 1945, he was 8. Then he mentions he was in some other conflict in the Middle East or something. So this guy's just talking, I think. But
yeah, that was awesome.
He's the real villain of the whole movie, I would imagine. And then across from him, Jason Patrick is playing Konstantin Kovachenko. Mm-hmm. Second in command of the tank moving down. Then we have
Anton.
Who's the other
Stephen Baldwin is Anton Golikov.
Stephen Baldwin is Anton, who's kind of, I don't know, is he the driver or is he the gunner? I can't tell.
He's the shell guy, He's like the loader.
Yeah. Yeah, he's he's the one that has got like.
Yeah, because they blasted. Have the dummy round that doesn't work. Or the misfire.
Mm-hmm. 1 in 100.
Then the interesting one was the Afghan guy that's on the crew that is, I was trying to figure out, is he from Afghanistan, just their interpreter? But he implies that he went to university and he's also an officer in the Russian army and a Russian citizen. He was played by Eric Arvey.
Yeah, I think he is. I think he is Afghani, and like his son is studying in Moscow, like on an exchange program. He said so. That's what made me think that he actually is from Afghanistan.
Yeah, and he's an actor I definitely recognize from other stuff. And I'm just going through his IMDb. He's been on almost every TV show you can think of.
Oh yeah, and he
from Cheers, Stargate, NYPD Blue, Roseanne, even modern day stuff.
He plays everything, like, from, you know, Egyptians to, like, Israelis to, like, he plays everything that's between, like, China and, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, West Germany.
It says he's Indian.
East Germany. Yeah.
Oh, he's going to show up in Charlie Wilson's War, too. So that's also on the list. All right. So we'll keep a track on this guy. I thought this guy was really good. But immediately, the captain immediately starts suspecting that this guy is sabotaging them.
Oh, God, yeah.
On the crew.
And that was so sad.
He keeps trying to set him up.
That was so freaking sad.
Mm-hmm. And I guess our protagonist Russian, Kobachenko, is kind of buddies with this guy. And he's telling him, he's like, hey, as soon as we get back, you need to transfer units because this guy's actually gonna murder you.
And at one point he tells Kovachenko, Dasko tells Kovachenko to murder him right after they panic and think that they're surrounded by Mujahideen, and they spin around with a flamethrower and kill a herd of deer. He sends out Samad to go check it out, and then he tells Kovachenko to kill him and he doesn't do it, and he gets back in the tank and everyone's just sitting there knowing that he was a breath away from death. And they don't say anything. Nothing. Like, Samad doesn't even pick up on it because he's just, like, there to do his thing. He's like, this is the price of, like, trying to bring my country up to speed. He's like, we have no way to survive this because it's, like, between the Russians and the Americans. Like, they're like, what the hell are we going to do? So he's like, this is what I think is best for my country. And he, like, damn, sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. And just like all the, that's why it reminded me very much of like interpreters and people that you pick up in these war zones to work with the occupying army. And they're kind of taking the bet, like, oh, maybe this occupation will work out. And then eventually I'll be the one with, you know, who understands modern warfare, modern machines, and I can own a business or something in the new Afghanistan or something.
Yeah.
But he's officially in the army. He's not just an attaché or something. So he has rank, but
it's so wild.
Sergeant doesn't care.
They're so bloodthirsty.
So wild they put in this movie, like, Samad is trying to pray, and then Daskal is like, that's it. Like, you're a traitor. Like, that's it. They put in this Islamophobia here in the 80s. And, like, we are still are, like, at that level for real in America for a lot of people.
Oh,
which
yeah.
is so wild.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that they put, even as, like, twisted and, like, confused as the people who made this movie are, they still put this in there that, like, just because he's praying doesn't mean, like, anything. Even if you think, like, oh, like, Muslim people are extremists. Like, you can't just say, like, because, I don't know. It's just so funny that they put, these people put that in this movie. Like, don't be Islamophobic, and then it doesn't matter. Well, I guess nobody saw this movie, so
it's just so weird that we're painting so much of ourselves onto these Russian characters.
Yeah.
It really is a great a great study in psychology of what we think of the heroes and the villains of this story.
They literally, like, this activity, fascist. This is fascist, and it's while it was still going on. Like, the movie came out before the end of the Soviet-Afghan War. It's crazy.
Oh, really? 88? Is that when did they leave Afghanistan? How long was their occupation?
Let's see here. It says February 15th, 1989.
And it's important for, I don't know how many people wouldn't understand this. Like, yes, we invaded Afghanistan after 9/11. However, the 9/11 terrorists were not Afghans. They were Arab from Saudi Arabia. That's where they were from, and that's who they identified as. They were not representatives of Afghanistan. They were... they did live there, train there, and participate in Mujahideen, which is just an act of warfare against the occupying force of the Soviet Union at this time, because all Muslim countries have some kinship to each other. So when there is an occupation of a war, fighters from around the country will come to support what they might see as a holy war or somehow, or a war of a moral justice, because it's a sovereign nation that is part of this belt of Middle Eastern countries, and they have a right to sovereignty. So there is justification in there for this war. But it gets muddled, especially in Americans' minds, because we've put a lot of the blame of 9/11 on Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. But we should really parse that out and understand that, like, we really should not have occupied that country, probably.
Yeah, no kidding.
Just because a cell of terrorists did operate there for a time, and they planned and attacked us, you know, from that base. But they were not Afghan nationals.
Yeah.
If I could parse through that jungle gym of geopolitics.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
No, it truly is good to talk about, because it's the American perspective is like, I don't know. Like literally 9/11, people were just like, can't we just nuke? Like, that's what people said. Like, I was in high school at the time. That's what like insane people were saying.
That's what the,
well, people
everybody who wears a MAGA hat at one time said we should just nuke all these, you know, countries or something.
Yeah, that's what people were saying literally like months ago when we it's mm-hmm. insane.
it's a complicated issue, and we really should have, like I said in the beginning, other people have tried to invade Afghanistan, and it just never works. The main problem with an occupation or an invasion of another country is that there will always be people who live in that country. What can you do? You're only visiting there. They've been there their whole lives. They're going to continue to be there. Mm-hmm. And if you don't get support from them politically, you're never going to control the country. And it's a lesson that nobody can seem to learn. Also, to bring us back to the movie, I want to point out this main difference between Afghanistan and Iraq, and why the Iraq war went very different than the Afghanistan war. Afghanistan is not really an industrialized country. There is very little in the ways of infrastructure, railways, roadways, dams, electricity, electrical grid, anything like that. It's not in Afghanistan. That's why there's really only, like they keep saying they're trying to find Kandahar Road. There's really only one road. There's one road in the whole country, and it's very poorly maintained. And that's why a lot of our mechanized units didn't go to Afghanistan, because you have to walk everywhere. Everywhere is, there's no way to supply via transportation. Like in Iraq, there's highways. There are multiple roads. There's railways. There's many ways you can get supplies. We just ran semi-trucks up and down the main highway that goes all the way from Kuwait up into Mosul and then up into Syria. So it's it's just like America with its roadways, but that doesn't exist in Afghanistan. So the idea that they could get lost is kind of funny to me, because there's can't, there's not that many roads. There's not enough roads to, for a tank to get lost.
And that's what happens when you kill the one guy. On a you road. Kill the one guy who knows where he's going.
Yeah, it's what is his name?
Samad?
The Afghan soldier Samad. Is the one who seems to know where he's going.
Yeah. But even then, like, I think he's mentioned, like, there's only one way or something. And then they just keep going the wrong way anyway.
Yeah, they have to get back to Kandahar Road. and then they're just driving to the void. And he has a map that's been burned. So he only has part of the map.
Well, it was so
what's
funny.
What's the worst I think that could happen?
Oh, my God, yeah. I think the burn mark goes right where there was an actual canyon. Like, when he looks at the map. He, like, mm-hmm. points to it.
Yeah.
Ah! Like, there's a hole right where the hole is. It's very...
This is just a classic story of a guy that will not stop and ask for directions.
Oh, God, I know. Man.
Yeah, so all right, so he kills the one guy, and then he ties Koborchenko up on the rocks with a grenade behind his head.
I know. Yeah. And for the crime of admiring the brave Mujahideen.
He's like, you want to join them, don't you?
He's like, you think they're good? You think they're honorable or something? He's like, I don't know. He's like, that's it. Like, yeah, they've been kicking their ass nonstop. And he's like, you know what? You're right, but you're dead.
He leaves now. And again, he's found. Well, first he's found by a group of dogs. That he kills with the grenade that's behind his head.
That's lucky.
He got out of that grenade. He got out of that grenade problem a little too easily.
Yeah, he was camping on the grenade just because he knew he'd have to use it. That was impressive.
I guess so, yeah. Because I was thinking, oh man, it would suck to be tied up with the sun beating down on you, but then you have to keep constant pressure on the grenade on the back of your head too.
Oh my God. I was just shocked he could, again, like, threaten Anton with the grenade. He's like, Anton, you're next. You're next. He's, like, pointing at him. He's like, don't leave me here. And I was like, how is he not dropping
the
grenade?
It's like Stephen Baldwin.
Yeah, weepy Stephen Baldwin. He's just like, I don't know.
This might be his best acting. I mean, I make fun of him as being, like, the worst of all the Baldwins you can get, you know?
Yeah, he got...
All of them come with their problems.
He got, like, scraped.
With Alec.
Somehow he only got scraped by a grenade, and he's like, I'm bleeding! He's, like, screaming and wailing. That's so good.
Oh, gosh.
Ah, oh, first people are shooting at me, and now I'm bleeding. Yeah. Like, it's a little bit of goofy comedy there. Because that's when they got ambushed at night. Well, they deserve to get ambushed, mm-hmm. because they're just sitting there. They got a fire going.
They're bickering.
And they have they're all yelling at each other. There's the rocks behind them are just perfect setup for an ambush. Like, you can't see up there.
Another great line by Stephen Baldwin. The grenade bounces off the tank, lands in the dirt, and he just goes, grenade! Like, he does, like, this weird yelp.
It's like he does it a couple times because they keep dropping grenades on him.
Oh,
I had to look this up because I've seen this in other movies about there being a hatch on the bottom of a tank. And I know the only tank I've ever been in is an M1, and I know it does not have a trap door underneath it. But apparently some tanks do have trap doors underneath them. So I don't know if an actual Russian-made T-55 is in this film. The main star of the film, the titular beast. I could not find online if there actually is a hatch, an escape, and it's in case it rolls over, you need an escape hatch.
It's
in most of the tanks and other vehicles I've been in. There's always a escape hatch on the side, because if it rolls over, it most likely the side is going to be up.
Mm. Oh, that's interesting. Makes sense. So, but yeah, the under hatch is a big like plot point in movies and TV shows. Like The Walking Dead, that's part of it. Like this is a big movies and TV shows thing, like under hatch.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know Fury also has at the end there's like an escape hatch on the bottom that saves some guy's life, and I'm just like, that's not actually. But apparently some tanks do, so I'll let that slide. But it's very convenient a couple of times in the movie that they have that that hatch. We talked a little bit about the next place they go. They hide out in the dark in the middle of the desert, in the middle of nowhere. And I don't understand what that thing, like those proximity warning things they put out around them. I've never heard of that technology. It's what they see the that there's people around them, but they're actually deer.
Oh yeah, what? Because that's not like radar or anything, right?
I don't know. That's why I'm saying I don't know what technology that is. I've never seen anything like that. That's the one big problem drawback of a tank is, it's the vision you're using is like, it's very good at seeing very far away, but you can't really see around the tank, and that's a big issue for other vehicles. I was in the Stryker vehicle, which has a much higher camera up on top of it, and you can see all around the vehicle most of the time, except for the back of it, really, as your only blind spot. But most tanks have a hard time seeing what's right in front of them compared to what is very far away.
Wait, is...
And at night, I guess that gets worse.
Is this the thing? There was, like, cameras on the T-55. So there was an external camera.
I'm sure there is. There's probably T-55 still in operation. They probably just kept upgrading them.
So maybe it wasn't, like, necessarily a picture, but like clips. I don't know.
They mentioned their infrared is on the Fritz, so they had an infrared optic, a night vision optic, and he has night vision goggles on at one point. The commander does, at least early versions of them in the 80s, though.
Okay.
So they have some night vision capability, but also nobody wants to stick their head out and see. They just decide to do... It's a pretty cool shot where they just fire all the weapon systems and spin the turret in 360 degrees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that flamethrower, I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. That was something else. That was like a Marvel move. Like play dead and then just like spin around, shooting fire everywhere. Just kill a bunch of deer, though. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't know there was a deer in Afghanistan. It looked like antelopes more than anything else.
Mm.
The charred bodies. Then that's the last night that the crew's all together, because then he starts getting knocking people off. And then Kobachenko gets discovered while he's tied up by the ladies.
Get some light.
They start throwing stones at him.
Hard knocks to the head there, like...
Oh,
it was like, man, you'd look a whole lot worse with those stones coming at you.
And then he uses the one word he knows in what do they speak in Afghanistan? I think it's Urdu. It's some variation on it. It's not Arabic.
I think it's Pashto.
It might be. It might be Afghanistan. Or maybe I'm confusing myself with Iraqi speak, but. What they speak in Iraq.
I think it's Pashto.
But his one word is Nawate, which means mercy.
Yeah, like Nawatai or like Nana what? It's the name of the play that this movie is based off of.
Yes, which means mercy, and he was taught that if you say that word, then the person is obligated to provide you with sanctuary and safety. And then the other crew rolls in. So then Mustafar comes in with his crew and he takes over. And then they have the debate of like, oh, we should just kill him anyway. I mean, sure, he said that word.
They're like, that's for Afghanis, dude. It's like,
yeah.
Come on.
So... You can't just murder a village of people. But him and Taj actually have a real budding relationship towards the end of the movie.
Yeah, that was cool.
And it's
That was a really good dynamic.
And because there's a really interesting subplot of Taj learning to become the Khan, where his uncle, like in the beginning, he's trying to order around Mustafa's men, and he's trying to order around everybody. And he's like, I'm the Khan, you have to listen to me. And his wise uncle's like, oh, anybody who says I'm the Khan is no Khan.
Yeah, that was cool.
You got to find your own style of leadership.
And then later, like when his uncle is like really, he got hit early on in his injury, and it was like really dragging him. And I think he dies right after he says this, but he's like, "Uncle, am I even fit to be the Khan?" He's like, "Now that is like something the Khan would say. Like that's the sign of a true Khan," or something like that. And then he dies. But like there is some fun stuff with Taj, like growing into his Khanship.
Yeah.
In classic 80s fashion too, it becomes almost like a buddy cop movie with Taj and Kovachenko. It's
yeah. Especially towards the end when they're fighting the tank. I love the turn this film takes with where he's becomes so desperate to destroy his own tank.
Yeah.
He really buys into the mission.
It's great.
I mean, he's just pissed at that point. Tie him to a rock and put a grenade behind him. I mean, yeah, so he's going to come for you.
Tank boy.
Tank boy. Tank boy. Oh, my God. That's so, like, like in the movie The Warriors. Yeah. Warriors. Come out and play. Oh, my God.
This is such a weird movie. Like, there's so many parts like that. I know, like, because this is while the war is going on. Oh my God.
All right. So, okay. But back in the tank, we got our three guys left. The trinity of the tank. The crazy lieutenant who's gone ridiculously crazy. They see Kandahar Road, but all of a sudden they realize there's a big a drop off between them. There's a canyon between them and the road.
They're like, woohoo! And they're ripping.
When that helicopter showed up, I was like, oh, wow, what is going to happen now in this movie? Because they all jump in the helicopter, the other Stephen Baldwin, the other guy jump in the helicopter. I'm like, all right, we're saved.
Yeah, because I wrote down right before then, I said, Lamau, bottle episode, 1:15 in. They finally realized that they've been trapped in behind the pass the whole time, 1:15 into the movie. And I think it's like 10 minutes later. That's when they meet the helicopter. It's like, what the heck's going to happen now?
Yeah, and the helicopter crew's like, all right, yeah, we'll call in an airstrike on this tank and we'll just fly you home. And this guy goes, no, we're driving out of here. Give us 20 gallons of fuel. I don't think 20 gallons goes very far in a tank, but whatever.
No, I can't imagine.
So he's like, no, just give us some of your fuel and we'll drive ourselves out of here. And the rest of the crew's like, why can't we take a helicopter? He's like, because you're tankers.
They look like they were just gonna like cry getting back into the tank. Like, why?
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Oh my God.
At that point,
and the tank is so fucked up at this point.
Oh my God. It's smoking. It's two different colors of smoke. It's leaking at least one kind of liquid, maybe two.
Yeah, the guys, I love, like, there's a point where Kovachenko is like, hey, we should all just walk out of here. We should leave the tank and just walk out of here. And he starts listing all the problems with the tank. It's like, we're running low on oil. He drank all the brake fluid. we're running out of gas. We're running out of ammo. Like, it's...
Oh, my God. It really... It was a cool, like, kind of breakdown of how tanks work. Like, you forget how many different mechanisms and fluids and, like, systems and all this stuff that go into that thing. The main battle tank.
Oh, yeah.
Different ammo types. Yeah. They even run out of...
I've been a vehicle commander. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I've been a vehicle commander before, and it takes so much work just to keep those damn things running.
I can't imagine. And in the heat.
It's such a pain in the ass.
Hard enough getting water for them to drink. They're, like, the radiators dry, like... Man, I can't imagine. That sounds like a nightmare.
And they poisoned the water.
Oh my God, yeah.
They poisoned the one water supply in the whole valley.
And they get only one Mujahideen, and then they kill the entire, right? The entire helicopter crew?
That was so ridiculous. The helicopter crew, after they refuse to take the helicopter out, that they then come across the helicopter crew that landed there for a drink of water. I don't know why. Like,
they mentioned it.
Helicopter rides are not that long.
Well, they mentioned it. They're like, we wouldn't have never found you if we weren't out looking for water. Like, that's what they were looking for.
Oh, they were looking for water.
Yeah.
Oh, they didn't bother to mention. Oh yeah, we poisoned the water supply.
Didn't seem important to mention, you know.
Yeah. Oh my god. I can't believe it's just, and all of them died. The first thing they say about it, they're like, "Do you think they radioed back?" Like,
yeah.
Because they're supposed to radio back for them to get fuel, I think, right?
Or mm-hmm. that they're coming, yeah. or where they are.
Yeah, to meet them at the pass with fuel or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, that's right, because they don't have just enough fuel to get back to the road.
Unbelievable. Okay,
then it becomes, and then after this, then the battle's on. Then the Mujahideen are chasing. Actually, no, like, because Mustafar's men get excited about the helicopter.
That was awesome.
So they ditch the mission.
Mustafar, like,
I kept wondering where this movie's going, because Mustafar and his buddy are in the helicopter going, "Hey, you think you can learn to fly this thing?" And I'm like, is they going to come in at the end and like attack it with a helicopter?
That would have been awesome. Yeah, they get in the cockpit.
I felt like they were setting up a Han Solo. Like, they're like, okay, let's take Mustafar off the board. So you forget about him, and then he'll come in with the helicopter. But it was...
Yeah, it's so funny. They're in the cockpit, like, just monkeying around like teenagers with the controls. And he's like, "Son, you're smart. Like, you think you can learn how to fly this?" And he's like... he just kind of laughs at it. He's like, "Yeah."
It's just like right after we left Afghanistan, then we saw, like, them flying around in our helicopters that we left for them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But they've got YouTube now, so it's probably easier to learn how to fly it.
Yeah, probably. It's probably a course you could take, get Microsoft Flight Simulator. Oh, yeah. all right, then it's Taj and Kovachenko, buddy cop, chasing down the tank.
And they get separated, and they're like, "Throw the RPG!" Like, they really, it feels like a buddy cop. They play like,
"Yeah, hey, you've got the rocket, and I've got the rocket launcher." Yeah. They're on the wrong side of the street.
Throw it.
Oh, my God.
My favorite part of that was when they were, like, ducking the fire, and he was, like, signaling, like, "Man, it was right there."
Oh, yeah.
He's like, "It went right over your head."
Oh, my God.
They really have a relationship, all built on sign language.
Yeah. They play like Beverly Hills Cop, like chase music in the middle. It's like a very 80s, it like forgets what kind of movie it is. It's so wild.
Yeah, it's. I was so on board for it though, because I really wanted them to get the win. I really wanted them to destroy the tank. And there's a great part in that when they're up on the ridge, and he's like, "Don't worry, they can't elevate the gun this high." And then the tank commander goes, "Ah, he knows I can't get the gun up that high." and Stephen Baldwin goes, "Wait, who knows? Who are we shooting at?"
He never says. He sees in the binoculars, but he never says.
He never tells the other two guys that it's Kovachenko that's chasing him.
Oh, my God. I mean, because that was his mess up. That was his mistake.
Yeah, he should have just, he should have just killed Kovachenko. He shouldn't have set up that Rube Goldberg, that James Bond death.
Oh my God, yeah.
Easily escapable.
He's Russian. I mean, hey, that's...
Yeah, that is a Russian thing. I'm just going to set this up and assume he dies.
Oh my God.
All right, right.
Involving him is, "I don't know why you didn't just kill him." And then he's like, "To buy his time." Which I don't know what time he thought he was going to buy him, but...
Yeah, I guess the Mujahideen would have found him and just said, good enough for today.
20 minutes. Keep him busy.
That's the thing. How hard can the tank be to find? You just follow the tracks. I mean...
I know.
<it's> not...
I know.
They lose those tank tracks so often.
Well, if they backtrack enough times, they keep going in circles. Like, you know, there's going to be...
Oh, is that...
This is a wild movie.
All right. And then this is... So then finally they get the shot off of the RPG. It hits the tank, but it only hits the muzzle. It only hits the cannon.
He Robin Hoods it. He's too accurate.
Yeah. It was too good of a shot. And when he's taking that shot, he's got the broken glasses on and he can't...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. They put, like, broken glass for like the camera. They do like a first person of him looking through the yeah. thing with the broken glass. Oh my god, this mm-hmm. is it's wild. And
that
like
yeah, and then the craziest moment was when that boulder fell, and that's what really killed the tank. And I was like, for a few minutes, I was going, wait, was this like, is this going to be like the hand of God or something? Because like just before then, he was praying to Allah or screaming
at Allah. He said, Allah, why have you forsaken us or something like that?
And that's when the rock fell. I'm like, wait a second.
I thought I missed a lightning bolt or something.
Yeah, I was about to rewind it when they revealed that it was the ladies, the crew of ladies.
Just some really like pissed off women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because like he threw the RPG launcher. I was like, did he throw an RPG and it like got like the pin hit like the a rock or something like and it just launched yeah. the right way. I was like, did I miss something? But yeah, a couple of women yeah, with grenades, like, right? tied to a rock.
Yeah, and really good knowledge of like geology and like physics. And
oh my god, yeah, they weren't sleeping in
engineering. Spot on. Yeah, so they're still alive. So then they light the tank on fire because the oil and the gas has been spilling out.
It's been spilling out this whole time. Couldn't have that been like a, I don't know, like a spark would have done it. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and that's also the real danger is like not so much like getting blown up in a tank. Like I was wondering if they were going to do this like big over the top explosion of the tank, but that is the real threat. If you can not only like just damage tank, but if it causes a fire on that tank, you're that's what's going to kill everybody.
Yeah. And brutally too.
Yeah. And then they come out and they kind of surrender.
Oh my god. Well, there was first a what kind of I guess is a Russian standoff where all three men in the tank have grenades and
oh my god. I forgot about that. See, so tosses out grenades and I'm like, "Okay, what are they going to do? Like run out and like toss grenades or something?" And guy goes, "Nope. All right, here we go. 1, 2, 3, everybody pull your pin."
Oh my god.
We're all going out together.
Got to stand in
he
order.
It's a weird speech, too. It gives a weird speech that's like, "All right, when your bunker runs out of ammo, you become a pillbox. When the pillbox runs out of armament, it becomes a I don't know what that
yeah, is. Yeah, what does he say? He's like, when your tank runs out of fuel, it's a pillbox. When your pillbox runs out of ammo, yeah, it's a bunker. When your bunker runs out of what happens next? I don't know. But yeah.
I don't know.
It's a grave. Heroes, oh yeah, and that's when heroes, he pulls, that's what it was.
You become heroes and that's when he pulls the pin. And they're all like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
You, sir, have crossed the line.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Because the second it happens, then they all, like, dive across the tank, grab his hand. They're, like, beating him, like, trying to break his arm. And then it cuts to outside the tank where they just hear grunting, and they're kind of looking like, what the hell's going on? Like, oh, God. They're, like, moaning and groaning. And then the hatch opens. Like, don't shoot. And then the officer kind of just gives up. He doesn't try to kill. He could have like done like death by suicide by Mujahideen, but he doesn't. He kind of gives up.
Yeah, I guess he might have one last confrontation with Kovachenko. Oh man, I'm surprised. So they let the other two do live, and the ladies are the ones who kill the tank commander, Daskal.
Yeah, they're barefoot, barely alive, but they do make it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they took their boots, too.
Up until the end, Anton is still wearing his, like, head bandage, like, just strips of it. But it's like, there's no wound. It's yeah. like...
it's like... The makeup department was on this film.
As long as we keep the dang thing on his head, it's fine.
But they just kept pouring more oil on them as the movie went on, to the point where they, when they get out of the tank, they are just like dripping with oil.
Yeah, yeah, Anton is
they're
jet
just
black.
So disgustingly dirty.
Oh my god.
Let's see. Getting to the end of the movie, so then another helicopter arrives, and the Mujahideen all run away. And Taj is really heartbroken that Kopachenko is deciding to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I think makes he thought him he'd changes? Stay.
He's like, come on.
What makes him change his mind? Like, it was, he looks down at, what's the guy? I've already forgot. Baskal's, like, bloody boots.
Mm-hmm.
Then he, like, almost looks like he's going to throw up. And then he takes his coat off and gets on the helicopter without saying a word. I don't get it.
Yeah, I think he was given some sort of a Mujahideen or
a rifle.
A Pashtun jacket or something.
Oh, that's what he took off.
So I think he's taking off that jacket that he was given. And
but he kept the gun.
Leaving in his uniform.
He kept the rifle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's his uncle's, like, a flintlock rifle.
And, like, holds it above his head, like, yeah. Wait, was that the rifle that the guy almost, like, he pointed at him and pulled the trigger and nothing happened?
Yeah, that's the same. That's right. That happens in the beginning. That was the uncle, or not
the other nephew.
That was his, the guy they crush in the tank did that to Kopachenko.
Taj's brother, yeah.
And that's Taj's older brother, we find out later. So that was his rifle, you're right.
He aims it at him, pulls the trigger, and it just clicks. The hammer flies forward and clicks, and he laughs at Kopachenko. Oh, man.
It's an old gun. It's from the Sheik Empire Wars, you know, that other empire that came through here. They accurately do have a mishmash of Russian-made weapons. Then they have older British weapons, those are the Enfield rifles. Mm. We saw those a lot in our World War I miniseries, implying that this is how far back, like, it's good set deck, I would say, because I was picking up, like, when they say Enfield, I was like, oh, that's a British-made rifle. That means that was from that war. And then he's walking around that flintlock, doesn't, like, looks out of place, too, and that's obviously from some other conflict centuries ago. So I thought that was well done with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. I mean, there's a lot of money flying around and a lot of arms sold and, you know.
Oh, yeah. There's not there's no schools in Afghanistan, but there's plenty of, like, guns and stuff, you know.
Because, yeah, the British started helping them out the same time we did. 2 years before this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Anything else we got to say before we move into some of our segments?
Just looking at my notes here, seeing. Yeah. The poison that killed
her. I didn't take notes for this one. I just enjoyed it. I sat down with a blank page and I was just like, man. I don't need to take notes. I'm having fun.
That's true. I had like eight little guys. I always like think at the beginning it's so dense with the amount of notes, and then it's just like an hour goes by without writing a single thing.
Like, oh, I should write something.
Yeah, all caps. The second note: OMG, this baby little cheeky's in the dirt. Bunch of keyboard keys. Because then I realized they put trauma makeup on the baby. And then I didn't say anything until grenade !! That was like 45 minutes.
We're back, and this is a good time to mention that if you or someone you love served in the armed forces of any nation, then I would like to honor them here on this humble podcast. Please simply tweet at NAR War on Film, the name, country, and branch of service, and I will read it here on this podcast after a commercial break. Alfred Noon of New York City, born 1921, enlisted 1939 and served in the 104th Field Artillery for 3 years. He was discharged 1945 with the rank of Staff Sergeant and returned to Brooklyn. He died in 1990 in Rockport, Texas. We salute you and thank you for your service.
All right. Let's see if anybody has any awards. All militaries offer rewards to soldiers for valorous actions. If we had to hand out an award for valor in the field of filmmaking to a character in the film or a member of the production crew, what award would you give out and to who?
I'll give the Pen is Mightier award to Kovachenko, who throughout a large portion of this movie is threatening people just with his write-ups in his notebook.
He's like, I've already written it down.
Yeah, it's in ink.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, whoa, that was quick.
Yeah, especially when Samad is killed, he immediately is like, he's pointing his notebook and his pen at Daskal, like,
yeah,
you're going after this. Like, it's so not as bad as killing your own men. And like, he just goes like, huh. Like, I thought he was going to kill him at that point. But he just, the pen is mightier, baby.
Yeah, it's like the threat of the threat of documenting your war crimes is the thing that drives that guy nuts. Oh, I got to give out my lost a battle but won the wardrobe award to Mustafa. Great.
Oh,
the guy's got a great.
Oh, you're so right.
And he knows it.
Oh, my God. You are so right.
Yeah.
He's dripped out.
Also, I don't know what award this is, but this is like, it's a B movie. And it's definitely, it knows it's a B movie, but there's something really good in this script. I'm not sure what it is. I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm not saying it's Shakespeare. Yeah. But like, with a couple of more rewrites, or like I said, like, just take the same script, just put it in a different setting, put it in Vietnam, make this movie about Vietnam and the American occupation, put it in a the Roman occupation of Jerusalem and make it about Jesus. Put it in, you could do it like, oh man, you could do this in any war where one larger nation or one larger political force is occupying a foreign land.
I think this was shot in Israel.
Timeless.
I think it was shot in Israel.
Yeah, I think so too. Probably because that's where the tank was.
Yeah.
makes sense.
And it did not look like Afghanistan at all. Nothing. Afghanistan is green and, quite beautiful, actually. Mountainous, mm-hmm. Snow. And this was clearly a desert.
Yeah. Yeah, that's wild too. Yeah, that's another thing that they're just like, who cares? As long as we say the Russians are bad. Like, that's the most important thing. Just, like, fudge everything.
Let's see. We're going to do some recruitment?
Man, this is tough.
This is going to be a hard one. There's a lot of people to love and a lot of people to hate. On this podcast, each guest is given the opportunity to recruit one member of the cast of their own private army to fight in future battles alongside. If you had to choose one character from the film to join your personal army, who would it be and why?
Ollie, how about you?
I'll add to my team of ragabond women and choose...
Oh, yeah.
Choose the main woman that was chasing everyone around with the bombs, being like, I'm going to use these things. I don't know on who, but someone or something is getting blown up.
And that's a good call.
Yeah, she had a very odd presence in the film, just showing up for all the major action sequences. But and I also noticed, I was going to critique something about like the fact that she is wearing some sort of a headdress, but it's not covering her hair. So it's not like a full hijab. But then when she's in front of any of the Russians, she immediately covers her face with it. She's only lax about the wearing the hijab when she's in front of her, well, I guess Taj is her brother. Mm. And she's related to a couple of these other guys, if that's his uncle, and Mustafa's some sort of relation as well. So she's very relaxed about not covering up her face in front of people she perceives as her brother or the other ladies. But as soon as the Russians are around, I was like, oh, okay. So I guess that was written in there somewhere.
Well, it was when they thought he was going to die, they didn't care. They were like stoning him. They didn't care. But as soon as like all the other guys came and he was going to live, then they were like, oh, Jesus.
There's a couple of scenes where she does care to cover, take care to cover her face, which was just interesting. Mm-hmm. Who you got? Yeah, it's a lot of people on the table.
There are.
I mean, nobody's taking Stephen Baldwin. No. Or Blake Brayfield guy.
All right. I mean, I got to take him. Like, I got to take Mustafa, right?
He's a loose cannon.
He's a loose cannon, but he's a badass. He looks awesome.
I think he just looks the worst. Yeah. We never see him do anything.
I guess you're right.
The one time we see him fire the rocket, he like doesn't know how it works, and he's like looking at it, and then it shoots off.
But he's willing to learn, and he can recognize when he's out of his depth too. When he says, "Son, you can learn this, right? You can learn how to fly a helicopter, not me." Like,
yeah. He also gives up the RPG pretty quickly too.
Yeah, because he knows, like, you know, hey, it's sometimes things are better off in someone else's hands, but not a helicopter. That's my baby.
Yeah, he's like, oh, sweet ride. I think I've said this guy's name wrong a couple of times. I am going to take Samad.
I think that's right.
Which is the Afghani member of the crew who gets killed first.
Mm.
Seems like a competent guy. Yeah. Like he gets relieved of his navigation duties, and then they get lost.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, and what is my function on the crew then if I'm not the navigator?
when Duskull tells him, go out there and tell me how deep the river is. And he's like, how, sir? Oh. And he's like, well, just get in there. And he walks in. And he was like, how is it? And he's like, cold, sir. And he's like, I didn't tell you to tell me what temperature it is. Samad's great. I love Samad.
He also has the institutional knowledge of Afghanistan itself, and that's what ultimately saves Kovachenko's life. All right. I've got some reviews, guys.
Oh my god, I can't imagine.
I got four. This is a segment called Dueling Reviews. I'm going to read a one-star review, rebuttal it with a five-star review. And I was, guys, there's a lot of love for this movie in Amazon reviews.
Really?
Section. There's a lot of five-star reviews. People, this is a cult movie. There's a group of people who have seen, I think now is a good time to mention that somebody recommended this to us through email, I believe.
Oh, that's great.
So thank you for this recommendation, because I didn't know what to expect going into this movie, and I see why people love it now.
The VHS tape is for sale on Amazon. They're still selling the VHS tape.
I would love to have a VHS tape. I think this movie should only be watched on VHS.
So oh my god, the gears turning while you're watching it.
The VHS cover.
Yeah, I think.
Oh
like,
my god, the VHS cover is Kovachenko holding the rifle above his head, like he was in the helicopter. But there's no helicopter, and there's three tanks behind him. They're really.
Oh, yeah.
They're talking a big game for someone who's only got one tank.
Yeah, it is impressive what they were able to do with this little amount of money that they had for this movie. Like the tricks of only having the one tank, of getting the helicopter in there, shooting it all like in a quarry or somewhere. Like, I could see the strings. I think the worst, actually. I think the worst offender is the Foley. There's sometimes where I'm seeing something on screen, I'm not hearing anything. Like there's sometimes where they're doing something in the tank and like they're dropping like a bunch of paint cans or whatever or something. And there's no noise to it at all.
Oh,
that happened a couple times in the movie. Okay. Gotta get into these reviews. I'm starting with a one-star review, and then I'm going to rebuttal with a five-star review. This one-star review comes from High Tech Hillbilly.
Oh, boy.
On Amazon, and he's a top contributor.
Oh, no.
One-star verified purchase titled, nothing but anti-Russian and pro-Islam propaganda.
Pro-Islam, okay. Thank God.
He goes on to write, this movie turned out to be pro-Muslim propaganda and nothing else. We bought it based on all the glowing reviews.
And
holy crap.
That's it.
Oh my God.
Pro-Islam propaganda. Hmm. Okay. I was I bought this for the anti-Russia propaganda, but the pro-Muslim propaganda went too far.
Oh my God. I like my coffee like I like my propaganda, I guess.
Yeah.
Just right. Just so I ordered it on Starbucks mobile app. That's so funny.
Okay, here I'm gonna let's get the taste out of our mouth.
That's unbelievable.
From Kindle customer, 5 stars, verified purchase, titled Mad Max meets Moby Dick.
All right.
This did remind me of Mad Max Fury Road because it's the same plot of Mad Max Fury Road. They go down one road. And then they turn around and come back. It's the same story.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Let me, titled Mad Max Meets Moby Dick. It's mind-boggling this gem did not get more exposure. The Soviet-Afghan conflict hits home as I have lived through it in the 1980s. I am generally wary of American movies about Russians and Russian movies about Americans. I've lived in both countries and experienced both cultures. I can pick up on certain subtleties and inconsistencies, like replying, yes, sir, instead of yes, comrade. But this movie
subtle
surpassed all my expectations. Rarely do you get casual graphic brutality and fragility tugging at the viewer's nerves. The screenwriters do not take sides. Modern audiences might be taken aback by how sympathetically the Mujahideen were depicted. The film was produced in 1988. At the tail end of the Cold War. So it's not surprising that the Soviets are not portrayed in the heroic light. At the same time, they are not portrayed as characters either. The characters on both sides have surprising amount of depth and the kind you do not necessarily expect in a military film. There is a decent amount of philosophy, psychology, and theology woven into the action scenes. The cinematography holds pretty well and doesn't have a dated feel to it. Definitely worthy addition to your war movie collection. I agree, but I think I didn't read these ahead of time. I kind of just read like the first couple sentences to make sure it's going to be good. And I think he touched on a lot of stuff we've kind of touched on with this review.
Yeah,
I do have.
It's funny the Mad Max meets Moby Dick because I feel like they're talking about slaying the beast as like the whale. But I feel like Das...
The Ahab character is more like Dascal.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like Dascal is the one, like, and the whale is getting the tank home. Like, he's...
Yeah, but Taj is also out for revenge.
I feel like...
It's kind of like, wow, I never thought about this. It's a double Moby Dick.
Double dick.
It's double...
sort of like Dascal.
That is, yeah, because think of like, what if you wrote Moby Dick from the whale's perspective? And isn't that's a little bit of what Melville was trying to do. Like, Moby Dick doesn't actually have an internal monologue.
Yeah, I feel like.
But yeah, I feel like two people who are trying to out to kill each other.
I feel like the sailor. Is like I see Dascal as like the sailor that just can't, like, as soon as it's like we can go home, he's like, what do you mean we can go home?
We are, yeah,
we're in the tank.
The tank is your home. Here, have a grenade. We're gonna blow ourselves up with them later.
The tank's kind of like a ship.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely agree. I don't know. Okay, so I'm going to let you pick. Should I do the... I have two more that I want to reach. Should I do the 5-star or the 1-star?
Let's see. I mean, I feel like I got to do a 1-star.
Okay.
I love... Oh, my God.
from Abner Neiserman, one-star review, titled, "Very interesting, dot, 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 but stupid."
Oh my God. Wait, this review is from...
Spelled stupid.
Less than a year ago.
This is... Yeah. This, yeah.
Oh, wow.
January 16th, 2022. It goes on, and forgive me. Fairy tales can come true. It can happen to you if your name's Abu. Dot, dot, dot. Okay. Okay. An attempt at a sweet lesson on how, if we get to know each other, we can all win. Let me see if I can express it for the Israeli producers, actors, directors, and crew. Not all these people were Israeli. Yeah. But sometimes it isn't a question of Badal versus Nayawate, but of Nayawate versus Tejdek, mercy versus justice. Those Russians deserved to fry in that tank. Next time you do a movie based on the realistic probabilities, not dreamlike wishful thinking, it's the dialectic tension between Chesd, all compressed and loving and kindness, and Din, or I don't know any of these people, or Gavar, power and
these
judgment.
Are words. Oh, these are like words. Like
yeah, these yeah. are words. Okay, I got it now. Which resolve in the synthesis of Reichemann in the ideal world, the world of these words. You, yish. Yishud, which is unification in the States, but you need Din or Gavahar from time to time in this dichotomous, differentiated world where most of us spend most of our time. Most of us spend most of our
time. Wait, where are you going some of the time, brother? Oh my God.
Yeah, where are you stepping into fantasy? Yeah, okay, so this person's just saying that the movie was not realistic.
The Russians deserve to fry in that tank. Oh my God.
Yeah, he really takes a stand, but then he towards the end, he starts going into, but we need, I don't know, he's going into some sort of a moralistic stance.
Dichotomous and differentiated world. Most of us spend most of our time in.
Yes, you need a little bit of everything. You can't be too much. Don't be extreme. Don't be polarizing is what that guy
I'm very saying. Nervous about what this guy actually believes.
Yeah.
I'm very nervous. Because the way he was like, okay. They're all Israelis made this movie. I don't know. There was like a million different things
all.
That they could be like subtextually picking a jab at. And I can't even tell. I have no idea. I'm afraid of...
That's kind of like that. That sounds a little bit like Jews run Hollywood kind of talk, right?
There's that. Like, there's like maybe he
George Soros funded.
Yeah, but there's that. But then maybe he's saying like Israeli occupation of like who knows? I don't know what they're talking about exactly, and it makes me nervous to approach it.
Yes.
Like, is he like being like it's Israeli apartheid of. Yeah, I who knows? I don't know what he's trying to take a stand on. Because he doesn't say Jewish, he says Israeli. And then he says, like, sometimes you need judgment and justice and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't know. He probably, you know what, I'm just going to assume that he has the best interests of people at heart.
You know, and Islam is shown in a good light in this film.
Yeah.
Which,
for sure.
I can't think of another film that actually portrays Islam in such an even-handed way.
And in the 80s.
Yeah, in the 80s. And it's odd. And to take that Israeli stance on there is kind of weird. I think it was just made in Israel. I don't see Israeli name or Jewish.
Apparently names. There was stuff where like they got the tanks from the IDF and like who knows? I mean, I don't know. But...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was just practical reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Let's go into this 5-star review from Hamilton. Verified purchase on Amazon. I rate it as such due to providing the picture of what Afghanistan was like during the Russian invasion. 5 stars may be subjective. Well, it is. I rate it as such due to providing... he goes on to say the same thing after that. I rate it as such due to providing a picture of what Afghanistan was like during the Russian invasion, having deployed multiple times to Afghanistan, from viewing this movie again, had watched the original at the film's release, I could see how much detail was given, such as the Russian tank officer having electrical tape on a boot to show the poor logistics, and using authentic Soviet tanks, captured Syrian tanks, I guess. This was, I believe, the first film to simulate the firing of cannons using real ordnance, used a form of water, and the effect looks quite real, quite an achievement. There are only a few discrepancies, such as using U.S. 30mm machine guns disguised as a Soviet HMG. You have to look for them.
Okay.
All right. Well, they fooled me, too. The film does provide a culture of and the living of Afghans, and not much has changed since. It is a very good dramatic movie, not action-oriented or a popcorn movie. The opening quote sets the tone. Oh, I forgot what the opening quote was.
Oh, I saw it earlier.
I was just like, I'm in for this ride. Well, good for him for spotting those 30 millimeter machine guns. I thought that was pretty well disguised. That was a real, they at least had a real 50 cal, Dushka, or the Russian model of a 50 cal on top there. I hate becoming a gun pedant, but hope I don't. Just for the record, I'm not a gun nut. I enjoy the depictions of all military equipment for their, you know.
Mm-hmm.
For them being marvels of engineering, not so much for the death and dismay that they mm-hmm. produce. I think that if you go, YouTube has a terrible side of like gun culture YouTube that's really disgusts me.
Of course, yeah.
So I just want to state, although I have knowledge of these things, I don't actually participate in that kind of culture.
I found that quote here. When you're wounded and left on Afghanistan plains and the women come out to cut up your remains, just roll to your rifle and blow out your brains and go to your God like a soldier.
Is that a Kipling film?
Yes, apparent.
Oh, yeah.
My God.
Wow. Wow, yeah, Kipling has come up a lot in our... our short tenure of the war on film.
Yes, he has.
God, that's... go to your God like a soldier. Yeah. That comes up a couple times in the film, too.
Yeah. Do that before a Soviet kills you. I mean, that seems to be the moral of this movie.
Yeah. Oof. All right, we got through all those reviews, but there's a ton of reviews for this film. But we don't review films on here. We simply ask the question, do you recommend this film? And if so, who would you recommend it to? Charlie, do you recommend this film?
Yeah, it's just kind of like... it's just kind of a bit of a fever dream. It's like wild. You have to like remember that this was during the conflict that it's depicting. And like, it's told like from an American perspective, which we had a very big like interest in Afghanistan, even though we're like, oh, we're not there. That's not us. But I recommend it. Yeah, it's very interesting because like you said, We do this like not long after this, like almost verbatim, and we had done this before. Like it's funny to see. It's very funny to see. Like it's so bizarre. I don't know. And on top of it, yeah, like you said, there is cool stuff that they do, like in the actual making of the movie, like the tricks with the tanks and there's weird cinematography stuff, like a first person view as a tank killing a village, an Afghani village. So. What were you going to say?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I was kind of agreeing with you.
But yeah, it turns into a buddy cop in the middle. It's just the so I guess 2/3 of the way through it turns into a buddy cop movie. Bizarre. Yeah, it's worth a watch.
Yeah. Definitely. I think this is one of the films that I'm glad to be doing this project where I'm going through war movies and discover something like this. This was one of the good ones. I had an existential breakdown when we tried to do a Christmas series that fell apart. And I know, Holly, I think you mentioned that you had watched Mel Gibson's Fat Man.
Yes.
That movie really launched me into a depression that I am still clawing out of.
Oh my God.
To this day. It was so, so upsetting. I mean, I knew I had seen Passion of the Christ, and now I'm just reviewing Mel Gibson's life, but I've seen Passion of the Christ, and I know people are like, you know, that's his specific take on the, you know, the story of Jesus, and this anti-Semitic, and sure, we know he's anti-Semitic. We didn't need that movie to prove he's that way or whatever. to defame the sanctity of Santa Claus. To put on the robes and take up the mantle of a being of pure selflessness and charity and kindness. I'm sorry. Like I said, that movie really
wrecked you, man. It's gonna be okay, Kevin.
But somehow,
oh my God, Mel Gibson, he just can't leave us alone.
He really. But this movie, in a weird way, reaffirmed my love of humanity, even though there's a crazy bunch of shit that happens.
Oh my God.
There is still each character has a moment of deep human connection with another person. Even obviously the villain, the Dash Gal, is probably the one who doesn't display any of that. But at least the other characters do, even though this is a very gruesome war movie. I don't know why I decided to launch into a review of Fat Man, but yes, I recommend this. I recommend The Beast of War. It's a good. This is going to go up there in my my good war movies kind of list. I don't know. I'm not going to say top 10, but it's up there. It's on the list at least. It'll get a mention. So if you like war movies, if you like 80s action movies, I think that you enjoy this film.
Yes, it's an 80s action movie through and through. No question.
And if anybody has access to a tank and wants to make a feature-length movie, let's take this script and see if we can adapt it. I don't know. Maybe we can make it about a helicopter. I don't know. It has to be a tank. We could really do some damage with this script in a different time period. Holly, do you recommend this movie?
Oh yeah, yeah. I think. On top of everything everyone else has already said about it, you know, it's got a lot of good philosophical nuggets all throughout it. Our main guy, Constantine, was, you know, studied philosophy, and that came up. A lot of different, I don't want to say, it's not even necessarily religious, but more of like spiritual undertones, you know, talked about David and Goliath and, you know, the power of prayer, and things like that. Yeah. But yeah, I definitely recommend this to, I don't know, anyone, especially, you know, if you like 80s action movies, go watch this. And I say that not ironically or sarcastically, like I have in the past, like this was good.
Yeah. Agreed. Let's see.
And this is the kind of movie, too, like, people in the comments, it'll be interesting to hear what they have to say, because I'm sure some would be like, this is actually an allegory for the entire Soviet-Afghan war and, like, put into one tank, or, like, who knows? I don't know. I feel like there's, you said this is a cult movie. I'm sure people have a lot to say about this one.
Well, and I felt like
this was one
of our like best, I don't know, villains too. Like I found myself like yelling at the screen every time Daskal like did something. I don't know.
Especially when he gets him off the helicopter.
Yeah.
Like, it's the most illogical thing, but he's just great.
Oh man.
So let's go. Let's go around and do our final plugs, Charlie.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for listening. You can find me on Twitter at INFANGEC33.
And Holly?
Yep. You can find me on Twitter. I am not a mombot, or check out the Roundtable.
Oh, yeah. Another great podcast from anotherrobotpodcast.com, where there's lots of other great podcasts. Thank you for joining the War on Film podcast. Not a Robot Podcast does have a Buy Me Coffee app now. We're not doing the Patreon anymore. If you go on there, there'll be extra material from some of our other miniseries on there that you can only get by donating. The War on Film will march on, so please join us next week. We'll be continuing the miniseries of the films that depict the the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan, with 2007's Charlie Wilson's War. We get some Tom Hanks, good Tom Hanks action to wash out. To wash all the blood off.